The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Friday morning, and welcome to our end of the week edition here on Analyze This, here on your NPR station in the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX FM, where yours truly, Neville James, on my lovely day in paradise. Here's where you want to be. It's December the 8th. One month done humming already, man. One full week done gone. Today we start week number two. Got a great show. UVA gonna be joining us in hour number two, right? The athletics director and the vice provost for access and enrollment management gonna be joining us in hour number two. Might be talking with Dwayne Henry, a little bush T. Got a number of different things going on around the world. And locally as well. Yesterday we had some nominees that were before the Rules Committee, and they were approved and now are forwarded to the full body, I believe. The December session is going to be sometime next week. What we're going to do is we're going to reach out to the Weather Service so they could give us an update. As to what to expect over the weekend, hopefully more of the same with some showers sprinkled in between. And then we're going to touch on a number of things. So I'm going to ask, we got a couple tickets, the last two sets of tickets to give away for the Taste of Two Islands event. 6 days away now over there at the Mark C. Marion Center in St. Thomas. Okay? Don't forget, make sure I say this correctly. Don't forget to stay on top of the local news scene by tuning in to the WTJX News Feed with Marcelina Ventura Douglas at 5 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands. So I'll ask my engineer to reach out to the folks down in San Juan. Because we've been talking the last two times, Cecilia Villanueva, been the one we've been talking with. And I'm sure at some point, we're going to be looking at a little bit of precipitation. That's just how it works in December. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, we're closing down on the serenades, though. Right? We're, I think, 2 weeks away. 15 days away, the 23rd and 24th. Tonight, we're doing Limbrick Park tonight. And I had a press release for that event somewhere. I'm trying to find that. Because WTJX definitely playing a part in that tonight. Hold on there. Looking for that. I believe we got the Weather Service on the line. Good morning. Who am I speaking with?
Good morning. This is Robert Mitchell here.
the homeboy. Happy holidays,
hey,
man.
Same to you guys. Everybody okay?
Everybody is good.
Good.
Is the weather as lovely in San Juan as it is up here?
Yes. It is, Well, it's beautiful here in San Juan and around the Virgin Islands. You know, we're getting into the transitional period is here, and we're getting into the cool nights and cooler morning, you know, in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
Nice east, northeast winds. So early morning passing showers. So it's very nice weather.
How long are you going to stay this way? All the way through the season? All the way
right
through?
Right now, the way it's going to look, the general outlook for between now and into next week, the main problems, impacts that we're going to be having, the conditions are deteriorating seas, mainly because we have a northeast swell moving across the waters, and also the chance of rip current is going to increase through the weekend for the VI and portions of Puerto Rico, the north and east facing coastlines of most of the islands. So we have a moderate to high risk through the weekend for the VI, U.S. Virgin Islands. And to be more specific, we'll be along the north and east coastal regions, or we'll have high risk and moderate risk for the remaining beaches of the islands. Also, we have small craft advisories in effect, and this will go through at least through Tuesday morning. Main impacts, what's causing that is going to be because increasing winds, we're going to look, they're going to go from 10 to 15 knots to 15 to 20 knots,
mm-hmm.
With occasional gusts up to as much as 25 knots. And also we have a northeasterly swell along some of the north northern beaches. You could see some breaking waves anywhere between 8, occasionally up to 10 feet possible. So it's going to be pretty much hazardous and dangerous rip current conditions we expect. As far as weather, other than the northeast wind flow increasing, that's going to bring more, excuse me, more chance of passing showers along the coastal areas, the north and east coastal sections during the early morning. By about 9, 10 o'clock, that should break out, and you should have mostly fair weather conditions all through the weekend, except for the marine conditions, and, you know, nice seasonal conditions. Don't see any significant impact. There is a frontal boundary, which is going to stall north of us, and a little perturbation moving the easterlies, and that's going to merge across our area, and that's why we expect a better chance for shower activity into in the morning and late afternoon and evening hours over the weekend, possibly into early Monday.
So we're asking beachgoers to be careful then?
Yes, definitely. Beachgoers, they're going to see beautiful conditions. They're going to want to go out there, but be very careful. Moderate to high chance, like in St. Croix, all those people out there and along the north coastal areas,
mm-hmm.
You know, Kramer Park Beach and all that areas, you got to be very careful. And outside in the west end also, you know, the northwest corner there, be very careful. Also in St. Thomas. So just be careful out there and, you know, be alert. Remain alert. A lot of rip currents.
Boaters and beach, and the boaters, what about
boaters,
those?
Boaters, yes. The boaters, we're looking at sea conditions, like I said, 10 to 15 increasing to 15 to 20. And the seas, we're looking at 6 to 8 feet.
Yeah, you did say a small craft advisory.
Small craft advisory in effect through Tuesday morning.
Through Tuesday morning. Okay.
Yes.
I see visibility is a little bit better today than it was yesterday.
Yes. Visibility as far as no problem. Like, well, here, some areas, you know, probably up in the rainforest, and, you know, the temperatures are lowering down a lot, so we had a good cooling. And, you know,
yeah, man, yesterday morning, I mean, Wednesday night into yesterday morning, were cool, man. When you got in the car, it was low 70s.
Yeah, low 70s, I could imagine, you know, and then that's, you know, it's going to be pretty nice, too. So, and we're getting into that time of the year
mm-hmm.
where it's beautiful weather, you know, nice at night, nice and cool at night, and nice beach conditions and stuff like that. So,
this the dry season, right?
Yes, we're getting into that time of period now, especially, you know, that we get the this time of the year, with these frontal systems, when they stall to the north and we have the low forming, they generate swells, and the seas conditions could be, you know, hazardous, you know. And in the morning, we get the morning showers once in a while. When the winds pick up, the trade winds push these showers over from over the waters at night and move it inland. And then, you know, when we get the land breeze switched in, then that's going to push or keep everything off, and then we have fair weather days.
Okay. Bobby Mitchell, thanks a lot, man. Happy holidays.
Yeah, same to you guys. Everyone, take care and stay safe.
When you talk to Mommy, tell her we send her love.
I will do. We'll do one. Take care.
You got it. That's Robert Mitchell from the National Weather Service down there in San Juan. He's a homeboy. And so a small craft advisory, right, for the boaters. It look lovely out there, but be careful. Okay? And that's actually going to be that way through Tuesday morning. Okay? And I'm looking at some trees outside. I could see the, you know, they're moving around a little bit. So let's just be a little careful there. So tonight, right, a glow in the pot, a glittering jubilee of trees for the world to see, right? The 5th annual Limprick Pot tree lighting presented by the Cruzan Cultural Group will take place on Friday, today, from 7 to 10:30 p.m. Right, 7 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. at Limprick Park on on King Street in Christiansted. Right, the program will live stream on WTJX PBS channel 12, the Government Access channel 27, as well as the Cruzan Cultural Group Facebook page. The hosts will be Jimmy Weber and Sandra Gerard Leung. Okay. As I mentioned, you know, they got 13 volunteers that put together these holiday programs and activities for the community for the last 5 years. And they do what they do for the community to maintain, preserve, and showcase the unique culture, heritage, and tradition, and encourage everyone to come out and experience the same. All right, so we give a shout out to Cruzan Culture Group chairperson Vivian Flood, Emerson Flood. All right, the program is open to the public. Okay, this year, and it begins at 7, ends at 10:30 with a grand quadrille dance in the streets. Three sponsors began the decorating process a couple of weeks ago, over Sunday, November 26th, and will continue now until through yesterday. I know one of our employees here was playing a part in that as well, right? So, 10 sleepless nights, right? They're going to be doing their thing. And if you go on St. Croix Source, there's a nice article there. So a gentleman of Jones actually been doing their thing as well, right? And it's going to be good, right? So you got a lot of entertainment, right? You got the 10 Sleepless Nights. You got the children of the 10 Sleepless Nights Quadrille Group. You got Gentleman of Jones Choir, Central High School, Carib Divas, Dance Selection. You got Preserving the Art of Masquerade Dancing. Cruzan Culture and Traditions, I.I. Masqueraders, going to be doing their thing. With 10 Sleepless Nights, you got Musical Selection by Sasha Evans, Music in Motion, School of Higher Dance, going to be doing their thing, St. Patrick's School, Pan Ensemble, right? And Tree in the Park going to be lit up tonight, right? So don't forget, if you can't make it in person, WTJX Channel 12, your PBS station, along with the Government Access Channel and Facebook page, could provide you with minute-by-minute coverage, right? So and we got two highly articulate Cruzan, and Jimmy Weber and Sandra Gerard Leung hosting it, so that's going to be good, okay? Definitely want to give a shout-out to the Cruzan Cultural Group for doing their thing in, you know, preserving our culture, you know? And Dongtong, Christiansted could use the enhancement. I'm telling you, I got a very, you know, disturbing text message that is absolutely true, you know, from a Cruzan, and they said the roads in Christiansted are a public safety issue now, you know, and that's unfortunate. It really is. No, you know, we're all aware of the fact that infrastructure has to happen. We know that the recovery, you know, is a priority. An unquestioned priority, right? Having said that, you got to feel for the retailers and the business owners. You got to feel for them, man. This their time of the year. You know what I'm saying? And there's a likelihood that people are going to think twice about wanting to come into town. You know what I'm saying? If the the infrastructure, you know, is a threat. You know, and you got to feel for them, you know what I'm saying? You have to. You know, the administration, you know, they may want to believe, you know, we're beating up on them, but no, we're just calling a speed, man. You know, and that's unfortunate, man. It really is, you know. And actually, I actually spoke with Ron Phillips yesterday. And, you know, it's just sad, man. You know what I'm saying? Sad. And Christians that don't deserve it, man. Seriously. A particular Hill Street, man. I mean, and Prince Street, heading south to north, from Gracibelado down to Watergut. You know, that's the one south to north road that stands out. But Hill Street in particular, wow. In particular from King Cross over to Queen Cross. That one rough, mister. That one, they're rough. Man, I'm hoping that, you know, something could be done, you know. I don't see it, you know. We're a couple of weekends away from Christmas. You know, another week to the new year. I wonder tight, my son. I don't know. You know, and a lot of the economic activity starts on Company Street. A lot of it is Company, King, and Strand. And to a lesser degree, Queen. You know, and then you got a lot of residential run-ins up there, beginning on Hill and East and Fisher, right? Then you give up in the back of tongue there. But up the free gut hillside area, no, but that lower area there, you know, beginning with Strand and then King and Queen, that's the epicenter of the economic activity in Christiansted. And that's the worst set of roads, man. I feel bad for everybody involved. I really do. This is our time of the year. You know, and that's unfortunate. That's not like I said, man. But when I got that text message Sunday, and, you know, it's put in that context, it's a public safety issue. Wow. But it is what it is, you know. We come back, we'll have a little bush tea. We'll talk about a number of different topics. To close out the hour, we give away two tickets. Right? You can hear me let you know when to start calling 718-0761. You got two pair of tickets this hour and the second hour as well. We'll take a break. Be back right after this.
NewsHour has a rich legacy of in-depth reporting and strong storytelling.
Only four people have sat in that chair before us, and the enormity of this moment is not lost on me. People turn to us because they know they can hear from trusted sources of information and news.
That won't change a bit, even as the faces behind the desk change.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Bennett.
And I'm Amna Nawaz.
Weekdays at 7 p.m. on WTJX TV, Channel 12.
Saturday mornings, we're here for you with Weekend Edition. 2 hours of news, interviews, new music, new books, rattling good stories, interesting people, challenging analysis, laughs, air shows, and donkey rides for the kids. So come along with us. Weekend Edition, Saturday mornings from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
With so much going on, it can be hard to keep up with who's doing what and why. I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, letting you know whether it's news from across the country and the world or a deep conversation about a novel, movie, or music, we got you. Grab your coffee or your earbuds and tune in to Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Sundays at 8 a.m. right here on WTJX FM, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Opportunities at Bank of St. Croix. Bank of St. Croix offers CDs for education, homes, or vacations. Bank of St. Croix has two locations, one in Galas Bay at 340-773-8500 and one in Peters Rest at 340-713-8500. A penalty might be imposed for early withdrawal, new money only. Funds may not be transferred from existing Bank of St. Croix accounts to CDs. Rates subject to change at any time. Fees may reduce earnings and principal. www.bankofstcroix.com. Member FDIC. EIC.
Check this out, right? You're back here. Analyze this. Get ready. To savor the flavors at the Taste of Two Islands Food Festival. Be the 12th caller at 340-718-0761 beginning now, right? And win a pair of tickets to this delectable event on Thursday, December 14th at the Mark C. Marin Center in St. Thomas over at Antony School. Hosted by WTJX FM 93.1. It's a culinary experience you won't want to miss. Call now and indulge in the tastes of the island. So, 12th caller, right? You know what you're right down there, 12th day of Christmas. You know what I'm saying? So, the 12th caller, get two tickets to hang out with us next Thursday afternoon, evening, over there in St. Thomas at a Taste of Two Islands, a December event this year. Hopefully, going forward, it'll be back to the traditional November event day. You know what I'm saying? So, we are keeping an eye on a number of different things, right? So, let me run through them. See if Dwayne Henry can join us for a little Bush tea in a little bit. Keeping an eye on what's going on over there in the Middle East, because it's having significant global impact. Now, yesterday, right, University of Pennsylvania, right, is calling the School of Business, I think it's School of Business board members, right, want the university to get the president to resign, right? Because at a congressional hearing, the anti-Semitism sentiments did not go over well. And I'm gonna pull this up here. Yeah, major donors call on University of Pennsylvania to resign for disastrous testimony on anti-Semitism, threatening to pull back a $100 million gift. You know what I'm saying? And reading an article here from CNN, the walls appear to be caving in. And the University of Pennsylvania's president, Liz McGill, who faces scathing criticism over her performance at a House hearing earlier this week. Prominent donor Ross Stevens threatened to claw back a $100 million donation. The university's board of trustees held an emergency meeting Thursday, and the powerful Wharton Board of Advisors, right, and you got the Wharton School of Business there at Penn, that leads the University Prominence Business School, called for a leadership change at the university. McGill remained president after the hastily arranged board gathering concluded Thursday. A source familiar with proceedings told CNN. But McGill faced a rebellion from Wharton Board of Advisors and a growing coalition of donors, politicians, and business leaders who denounced her testimony. During Tuesday's House hearing, McGill, along with the presidents of Harvard and MIT, did not explicitly say that calling for genocide of Jews would necessarily violate their code of conduct on bullying or harassment. Instead, they explained it would depend on the circumstances and conduct. McGill had already been under fire from prominent donors, faculty, and students, and alumni prior to Tuesday's hearing after multiple incidents of anti-Semitism on campus in recent months, and what critics have said was a tepid response to those incidents. Wall Street CEO sent a letter on Thursday to Penn threatening to take steps that will cost the Ivy League school approximately $100 million if McGill stays on as president, CNN has learned. Stevens, a Penn alum and CEO of Stone Ridge Holdings, argues he has clear grounds to rescind $100 million worth of shares in his company that are currently held by Penn. He specifically cites McGill's disastrous testimony before Congress earlier this week. Quote, absent a change in leadership and values at Penn in the very near future, I plan to rescind Penn's Stone Ridge shares to help prevent any further reputational and other damage to Stone Ridge as a result of our relationship with Penn and Liz McGill, Stevens said in a note to his employees on Thursday, obtained by CNN. Lawyers at Davis Polk, representing Stone Ridge, wrote a letter to Penn that cites an agreement between the school and the firm. That agreement, according to Stone Ridge, gives the firm the ability to retire the shares for cause, including potential damage to Stone Ridge's reputation, character, or standing. The Wharton Board of Advisors, comprised of a who's who group of business leaders, has joined a growing chorus of voices calling for McGill's immediate ouster. Quote, as a result of the university's leadership's stated beliefs and collective failures to act, our board respectfully suggests to you and the Board of Trustees that the university requires new leadership with immediate effect, the Wharton Board of Advisors wrote in a letter sent directly to McGill. And it goes on and on. You know what I'm saying? You know, this is as delicate a situation as there could be. You know, we got a number of perspectives as a result of what's taking place in this conflict. And you got, I'd say, four different groups or four different factions that are in play here. You got Hamas, who initiated the conflict. You got the Netanyahu administration. You got the Israelis, citizens who were targeted. And then you got the innocent Palestinians. And I got Dwayne Henry on the line here with me. Morning, Counselor. Glad to have you on. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Good morning. I apologize.
Nah, man. Don't worry about that. I was just previewing what we're going to talk about anyway. Specifically, what's taking place at Penn, where you had university presidents from Penn, Harvard, and MIT, and Congress, and it didn't go well. And now people calling for resignations, threatening, rescinding financial support for the universities and all that stuff. To me, though, I'm starting to sense that people waving and using money as a means of ignoring that this is something that's completely out of our control, man. You know what I'm saying?
This is the problem, is that now it's like, if I go give you money, you go do what I say. Exactly, you know? And universities, you know, whether you agree with them or not, they're supposed to be these bastions of free speech.
Yeah.
Of course, you want nobody inciting no violence or preaching about genocide, to promoting genocide and hate. But, you know, from the Skokie, remember when the Nazis marched in Skokie?
Yeah.
All years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And they big case and stuff, and they had the, you don't like those guys, but they got a right to march. The Klan been marching for years. You know, they had the thing in Williamsburg a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
when even the president came out on their side. But now we call it for heads because a few students, I think it's wrong what they're doing.
Not only that, though. I mean, you got to look at who is doing what they're doing and look at them in the proper context. These are not,
yes.
40, 50 years old. Like we are now, where we are less inclined to act irrationally and emotionally. These are young people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And when you look at them, and they just lashing out, and a lot of them, they just want to be heard. You know what I'm saying? And wow, this is unfortunate, man.
I agree.
Yeah,
it is. And then to blame it on the president. I mean, even the vice president's husband yesterday gave a speech in D.C. at the lighting of the menorah and made some comments. And like I said, that's a thin line because we don't want to promote any activity against anybody of any race or religious persuasion. And we know the Jews in particular, them and Black Americans have probably been the two most, and Native Americans, I would say, the three most oppressed groups in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's some empathy with them. But if somebody wants to criticize Israel, and then I think we need to make this is what I was thinking last night. Criticize it, Israel is not anti-Semitism at all.
No. And they conflate, and they conflate in both of them to be the same.
That's exactly what they're doing. You could be, they're Jews that Jews for peace that are against the Israeli government and stuff like that. So are they against themselves? Obviously not.
No. I, and to me, once again, you're looking at bystanders, right? Mm-hmm. Being victims, right? Because
yes.
None of them are over there in the midst of the conflict, right? There's nothing that someone is saying in America that really impacting what's going on in the Middle East. Yet they getting penalized, you know. And
yes.
So what you have is woke versus cancel culture. Okay?
Yes. So I heard somebody put the tournament together called woke cancel culture.
Here it is. So that and that's unfortunate, you know. Here is what I do want to say, right? When you're going to make a public appearance before Congress, a highly charged environment like that to begin with,
mm-hmm.
right? It would be in president's best interest, right, to put out a disclaimer at the top of the speech. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And by doing that, you can always refer back to it. You check? Because...
I previously said...
Yeah.
I continue to say...
And then what they really need to do, right? Because there's a skill to it, right? You don't come there to testify. What you really need to do is ask some questions, right? In other words, mm-hmm. what are we supposed to tell the young people, right?
So you go flip it on them.
Flip it on them. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Put them on the defensive. Yes. And now a president, right, is looking at losing a career educator, because that's what most presidents are, right?
Yes.
Is now looking at losing her job because of money involving a conflict that is thousands of miles away from America. Wow.
Right. Well, look, and then, you know, we talked about University of Penn president, but Harvard, they've been called for her resignation too, and she's the first Black president.
That's right. You know what I'm saying? So, and by the way, callers, don't forget to call in to get your tickets, right? The first of two sets of tickets for today is in play right now. 718-0761. Call now. right? Closing down on 12, so make sure you call now, right? But my very first year as a senator, when we met with Senator Crapo, he's from Idaho, right? And he said one of the things that you got to measure is how you go after people, because when you start attacking them and you cross a line, the sympathy effect going to start to kick in, and then that's going to undermine what you're attempting to do. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You're going after these female presidents, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Tell them hold it down, you know? You know what I'm saying?
It was three females.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So have good optics either.
Yeah. Tell them be careful, because in some instances, that could be perceived, you're going after them because they're women. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And not this woman, in one instance, a woman of color. You know what I'm saying? So,
yes.
So
yeah, because I'm gay.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yes.
And she especially, because she just got a job, and she's like, really? You guys are attacking me for this?
Yeah, man.
You know? I haven't even got a chance to perform yet.
And not only that, you know, we got this bad habit of assuming that because somebody is in charge, right, that they are automatically responsible for everything. Yes, they are in charge, right? But you're claiming America is a free country, right?
Thank you.
And not only that, we're talking about institutions of learning, right?
Which are supposed to be bastions of free speech.
Yes. And not only that, not just free speech, processing multiple perspectives, showing a high level of sensitivity to everybody, right?
They're marketplaces of ideas. That's what universities are supposed to be. A marketplace of ideas.
Ooh.
Everybody comes selling something.
That's why we don't.
And the whole, like you said, the education process is to teach you how to weed out the nonsense and absorb the beneficial.
Class, clearly you had a good cup of lemongrass this morning, because you come with that nice marketplace of ideas. I like that one.
It is.
By the way, yesterday we had a nice conversation. We were reminiscing about a great musician with Virgin Islands roots, Sonny Rollins.
And
Leslie Comision called me afterward and was educating me. She said St. Thomas is really a byproduct of Fire Dong Day, right? Which is a classic, a Randy Western classic, you know what I mean? And then I got a text message, a link from a University of Virgin Islands professor, great interview. And what I thought was awesome was how Sonny Rollins was so sharp that he decided he wanted to take his game to our next level, and he went on sabbaticals ever so often to practice, right? 2 years of practicing on a bridge. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You got to be a special human being to have the wherewithal to that. When we come back, and thank you, Leslie and Professor at UVA for educating me there. When we come back, we're gonna talk about some developments with the former president, because this year getting wild, where he actually now telling the judge, you got to freeze the case now. You know what I'm saying? So we'll have some fun with that. We'll be back right after this.
The magic of the Crucian Christmas 4-Day Serenade. Join the legendary Stanley and the 10 Sleepless Nights for a two-night celebration like no other. On Saturday, December 23rd and Sunday, December 24th, from the stroke of midnight until the first light of dawn, local Christmas tunes, rhythmic dancing, and the joy of holidays light up the street of St. Croix. Each night begins at Ginger Thomas, heading east on Saturday, then west on Sunday. Set your alarms, gather your friends and family, and create unforgettable memories with Stanley and the 10 Sleepless Nights in the Crucian Christmas 4-Day Serenade.
Race is complicated. On Code Switch, we don't dumb it down for you.
And on Life Kit, we have advice on everything from money to mental health.
It's Code Switch and Life Kit from NPR.
Saturdays at 2 p.m. on WTJX FM.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, Wait, We Give You a Chance to Impress Your Friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists? You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX TV, Channel 12.
Sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Over there at Anthony School in the Mark C. Marin Center. I'm looking forward to hanging out with you at this awesome event. Spectrum Band providing music. The Culture Man, George Silcox, is going to be the MC, and, you know, the WTJX family is going to be there hanging out with everybody. So looking forward to being in St. Thomas and having fun with you next week, Miss Joanne White. Congratulations on winning, too. Got one more set coming up in the second hour. I'm looking forward to give those away. We got Dwayne Henry on for some. Bush tea. The lemongrass are good, counselor?
Yes, actually, very good. I drank it like 5:30 this morning because I've been up all week and we got bar meeting at 9 o'clock.
Oh, you got bar meeting? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, make sure, look now, behave yourself, you know.
You're not asked no question.
your parents used to tell you when you're going to certain places, behave yourself.
I got to double check and see who the speaker is, but normally we have people like Professor Levinson, you've seen on CNN many times.
Yeah, yeah.
And Professor Chemerinsky from California, very well-known. He wrote several, horn books.
Mm-hmm.
And constitutional law. He's a kind of law specialist. So between them two, I guarantee we're going to get something political.
Well,
if they're here. They usually, they come usually every year.
That'll behave yourself, okay? That's all I got to say.
No,
yesterday, in the Washington, D.C., January 6th case, former President Trump, his lawyers are seeking to freeze his election fraud case after filing an appeal, right? You got right to laugh, right? If granted, the freeze could delay by months his trial due to begin in March, beginning before a Washington, D.C. jury. The appeal is based on the complex legal issue of presidential immunity, right? Trump's lawyer, Todd Blanche, filed a notice of appeal on Thursday along with a $605 filing fee. I don't know why they include that one in there, but, you know, right? At the same time, he also filed a motion for an automatic stay of proceedings pending appeal. On December 1st, of course, last week, Friday, Judge Tanya Chutkan rejected Trump's claim that he had presidential immunity from prosecution in his election fraud case. In one of four criminal cases that Trump is facing while he campaigns as front runner for the Republican presidential nomination. It's one of four.
Uh-huh.
He also has pleaded not guilty on other charges as well, right? So check this out,
uh-huh.
Right? The filing, according to Blanche, right, his lawyer, the filing of President Trump's notice of appeal has deprived this court of jurisdiction over this case in its entirety pending resolution of the appeal. Therefore, a stay of all further proceedings is mandatory and automatic. How so, counsel?
I don't know that to be the case. I guess the angle they're going from, and I haven't read it, but the angle they're probably going from is in terms of prejudice that his case is
No. They reference some Supreme Court ruling, a 5-4 ruling from last year, but that has to do with arbitration. That doesn't apply to a criminal case.
Like I said, I haven't read that. But I would assume that it's going from some sort of prejudicial point of view that if they proceed. But like I said before, the thing called shepherdizing, you gotta be careful when you're quoting cases to make sure that what the court is saying. First of all, you have the holding, and then you have what's called dicta.
Mm-hmm.
And dicta is just stuff they don't just talk about. And a lot of times you'll see lawyers pull out dicta and try to present it as controlling. And dicta is not controlling in any case. It helps build an appellate case. You got enough dicta, the Supreme Court could rule that, okay, well, maybe we should look at all this and make it the rule. But until then, it's just dicta. And that's probably going to be, if that's the case in this thing, then the case, I don't, like you said, it's an arbitration case, and it doesn't seem to have been binding on a criminal case. So I don't know what they're talking about.
Now, let me ask this question, right? You are indicted in a criminal case. You ask the court to dismiss the charges.
Uh-huh.
The court says no. In this case, President Trump claimed that he has presidential immunity. The court says no, you don't have presidential immunity. Then you file an appeal to the next highest level, right? Uh-huh. The appellate court, yeah. Right? So you could do that. You could file an appeal and tell this court of jurisdiction, you can't do nothing because we appealing. That's how it work?
No, not at all. That's what I'm saying. I don't know where they're coming from. I haven't had a chance to read their thing to try to figure out what their reason is. But normally, unless it's if the appeal is interlocutory, which means that
educate us there. What is interlocutory?
Okay, that's when there was an issue at the trial level that you appealed. And when you have an interlocutor, that issue, if it doesn't get resolved, it could the trial itself would not be proper.
So
it would not be proper to go ahead with the trial until this appeal has been heard.
Okay.
I'm not sure in this case is that this is an interlocutory appeal.
Let me ask this question. One of the things that we hear in trials from judges are that you could appeal, but you can't appeal whenever you want. Certain things have to happen. In other words, the trial has to go forward first, yes. And then after the result, then you can appeal. Explain that part, because we're getting the impression here that the defendant wants to appeal everything at every level.
Right. That's why there's a thing called the interlocutory appeal, and then you have regular appeals. Is that an interlocutory appeal could be made before the resolution of the trial. Most of the times, the trial has to be resolved first, come to a conclusion,
mm-hmm.
Right, and adjudicated, and then you file whatever appeals, because the appeals are normally based on errors during the trial. So that's why we have objections. The purpose of an objection mainly is not just to win the judge's immediate ruling, but also to preserve items for appeal, errors for appeal. So you make sure you object on something, because later on, when you look at the case at the end, you can say, well, you know what? This is appealable, because when I objected here and he overruled me, he should not have overruled
mm-hmm.
me. And And so you appeal those. But that has to happen. The decision has to be made in a case before you could do that. With the interlocutory appeals, and they're not many of them. There are many grounds for them, but they do. Usually it's a constitutional issue or something like that. I guess they're trying to, I'm not sure if this is truly a constitutional issue or just the Executive Powers Act issue. I would have to read and see if but normally those types of appeals go to the fundamentals of the law.
Okay, the case is Coinbase, right? A Coinbase case. The Supreme Court considered whether an interlocutory appeal, like you just mentioned,
there you go,
from a denial of a motion to compel arbitration necessitates an automatic stay of proceedings in the district court pending the outcome of appeal. The Supreme Court held that it does. Of course, this is their interpretation of what the Supreme Court did, right? The quote, the sole question here is whether the district court must stay its pretrial and trial proceedings while the interlocutory appeal is ongoing. The answer is yes. Yes, the district court must stay its proceedings, right? However, that's an arbitration case, right? You're talking about a criminal case here, right? Additionally, on Friday, the appeals court in D.C. deemed that the president is not immune from civil cases, right?
Right.
So are they appealing to that same court?
Yes.
Are they appealing Chutkin's ruling in the criminal in the criminal case?
It goes to the D.C. circuit.
It goes to the D.C. court. Okay. DC. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why most councils are.
It's not a receptive argument audience at all.
Yeah. But there are four Republicans on that appellate court, you know.
Yes, but you know.
Excuse me. Four judges that were appointed by Republican presidents.
Yeah. Right, there you go.
Yeah,
it's a distinction. We don't elect judges, so we don't know what they
we
are.
We don't know what they are. Yeah, correct.
But the thing is, the other thing, you know, that court has been set up with him. You know, that D.C. Appeals Court has struck down several of his stuff. Even during his presidency, there was a couple of things he tried to, trying to think of one that comes to. But I know he doesn't have a good track record with the D.C. circuit.
So let me ask this question. So they're asking for two things. Right, they've appealed to the DC appellate court, and while they appeal to the DC appellate court, they're telling or asking the judge that she can't proceed until the appeal has been heard by the DC appellate court. They're telling or they're asking?
I don't know if they did the legislative case here, but they told the judge.
By the way.
Generally, what you... Go ahead.
Now, by the way, I wanted to know that issue we spoke about on Monday, I found out from someone very much in the know that Judge Gomes-Carty has been deemed the senior sitting judge in St. Thomas, and Judge Jomo Meade is the senior sitting judge on St. Croix.
There you go.
So I think that answer...
And I also found out that... I'm glad you put that out because I verified it with someone very much in the know, and they said clearly she has authority.
But you brought this up based on logic. You were saying she can't walk in the court and just adjudicate cases on her own.
That's how Lord should tell you.
Clearly, she had some authority to do so.
What is she doing in the building? You know?
So
then they're appearing in front of her. And it's just so stupid.
Yeah.
But but what I was saying about we were going back to
the question is, are they telling the court what to do or asking the court?
They're probably pointing out to the court that the court should be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times.
So there's nothing.
You're telling them, you can't tell a judge what to do, but you could ask the court to take notice that X exists. You know, you going to trial and the judge rules against you on something, and you say, well, you know, or you're just going to trial and you stop and you say, Your Honor, we'd like the court to take notice that January 4th, the legislature passed this law that says maybe the court could be unaware of something. So you point it out to them. You can't tell them, but, you know, I would have wanted it to say my client is entitled to an automatic stay. Mm-hmm. So like I tell you, it's all about how you say it to them. So I would have said like that, that my client is entitled to an automatic stay, rather than saying that, the automatic stay is demanded, and the language you use. But that's the kind of blustery that Trump and his people, those guys are going to end up getting disbarred, you know. People are just waiting for this nonsense to get over. But, you know, these attorneys' behaviors is just way unethical.
You know the real reason why, you know, I'm just speculating here. You know the real reason why they probably want the trial to freeze now? The court has sent out jury notices, man.
They're serious?
Okay. The U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia has sent prospective jurors a pre-screening form asking about their availability to appear in person February 9th to fill out a written questionnaire for use in the jury selection process for a March 4th trial. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's coming quick.
So that happened earlier this week on the heels of the judge rejecting to me one of their few arguments, which was a dismissal of the trial based on presidential immunity and double jeopardy, right?
Right.
She knocked on both of them last week. So this move to freeze, to me, is about, look, now we ran out of time before March 4th coming, so we got to find things to do. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To undermine this.
And you know, the thing is, attorneys should be doing everything in its client.
Yes.
I think, but there's such a thing as going too far. And I'll give you like an example. That lady with the, remember the blind sheik?
Yeah, yeah, the one at 1993, yeah. World Trade Center.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His attorney went to jail and all.
Yeah.
You know why? She was passing stuff to him when she went to visit him.
Here it is. Here it is. Crazy.
And then you've had attorneys that have went to jail and stuff for like revealing witnesses' address and getting them killed and all kind of stuff.
No, don't forget, sometimes when they get successful, they get out of control. Like the one who was the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, he's in jail now, right?
Yes.
Out of control. By the way, we're gonna break. One listener said, "Morning, marketplace of ideas. I love it." Okay, so people like that reference. Thank you very much, Counselor. I enjoy your weekend and enjoy the bar meeting. Okay?
Yes, I will. Okay, and I'm going to be here.
Okay, good. We'll take a break and be back right after this with UVI.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
WTJX's Taste of Two Islands is back. Join us at Anthony's Mark C. Marin Center on December 14th for the long-awaited return of the Taste, a culinary feast for the season. Hosted by me, George Kulchaman Silkat. Tickets are on sale now through Thursday, December 14th. Tickets are available at Chelsea's Drugstore in Red Hook, Barefoot Buddha across from Haven Site Mall, and Bonita's Cantina in Nisky Shopping Center. Tickets can also be purchased online at wtjx.org/taste or call 340-774-6255. Shuttle service will be available from Haven Site Parking Lot to the MCM Center. Don't miss this opportunity to experience the magic of local cuisine as you dance to the rhythms of Spectrum Band. Sponsors for this event are VI Lottery, West Indies Company, Cardo Wine and Spirits, First Bank, Bellows International, the VI Office of Highway Safety, the VI Housing Finance Authority, and the VI Public Finance Authority. It's the return of the Taste, Thursday, December 14th at 6 p.m. A taste you can never forget.